Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, May 13th, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday. It is 46 degrees with fog and mist here in upstate New York today. So great. We went from summer to fall or early spring again in a 24-hour period. Gotta love that. So today, I have all kinds of things to talk about, though my morning was just kind of trashed in about 45 minutes. It's real easily. That was great. Thanks, guys. So I don't know. I mean, honestly, I was in the mood to do a show. I'm not really much in the mood anymore, but I guess we'll try and hack through this. A couple things I want to talk about, and I don't think I even posted that story, but I guess I'm going to have to find it. We're going to look at a few things. Yesterday, the show looked at lots of robots and artificial intelligence. I don't know if we're going to actually go there today. We might look at a little bit of it and maybe some DNA stuff. I don't know. I'm kind of annoyed right now, to be honest. So let's see. Some of the big news yesterday, I caught a bill that is up in front of the House right now at a federal level on congress.gov, titled Vaccinate All Children Act of 2015, H.R. 2232. Pretty interesting. I shot that over to April yesterday. And April from Truth or Talk Radio, April and Verstein are very on top of the vaccine debate and all the issues behind it. And April put out a pretty nice reply to what an idiot this guy is who wrote this bill. I guess there's all kinds of inaccuracies in here, and he cites acts that have been proven fraudulent or some studies, I mean, that have been proven fraudulent. Let's just read this for a second. H.R. 2232, to amend the Public Health Service Act to condition receipts by states and political subdivisions and public entities of state of preventative health services grant on establishment of a state requirement for schools and public elementary and secondary schools to be vaccinated in accordance with the recommendations of the Advisory Council on Immunization Practices and for other purposes. The one thing that really caught my attention as I was reading through this, number one is the requirement. So this is pretty crazy that they're pushing this now at a federal level. Requirement one, for state or a political subdivision or other public entity of a state to be eligible to receive a grant under this section. So yes, we're going to dangle the carrot. And if kids don't get vaccinated, you're not going to get your federal monies. The applicant shall demonstrate to the secretary's satisfaction that, subject to paragraphs 2 and 3, the state requires each student enrolled in one of the state's public elementary schools or public secondary schools to be vaccinated in accordance with the recommendations of the Advisory Council on Immunization Practices. Number two, and this is what got me fired up, exception for a child's health. The funding condition described in paragraph one shall not apply with respect to a student if a duly registered and licensed physician submits a written certification at the beginning of the school year to the individual in charge of the health program at the child's school. Okay, so you need a doctor's note. But check this out. Then there are three subsections under having a doctor's note, and this is what it says. A, the certifying that the physician has personally examined the student during the preceding 12 months. Also certifying that, in the physician's opinion, the physical condition of the student is such that the student's health would be endangered by the vaccine involved. So this is only going to be for any type of health-related issues. They will allow you to opt out. And three, and this is what got me, demonstrating to the satisfaction of the individual in charge of the health program at the student's school that the physician's opinion conforms with the accepted standard of medical care. What? So we're going to have some I couldn't make it in the real world school nurse determining whether or not my doctor's opinion is valid and, quote, conforms to the accepted standard of medical care. Who the fuck is that? That really pissed me off. I mean, if you've... I can't even go to a dentist, and we have the six-month dentist battle that's going to be happening this afternoon again with some doofy nurse who doesn't have half a fucking clue telling me that if I don't get every six-month x-rays or spray my kid's mouth with BPA-laden tooth sealant, that I'm neglectful of my child. So now we're going to have some doofy school nurse deciding whether or not my physician's opinion conforms to the accepted standards of medical care. Whose accepted standards? Your standards? The state standards? The federal standards? The standards for logical health care? The standards that look at research and question the narrative when all the research that's out there is backed by multi-billion dollar corporations who don't give two shits about your child but are worrying about their Q3 profits? This really has some issues. And, you know, I got a pounding headache right now on top of all this. So thank you again first thing this morning, because I have a couple big fucking bones to pick when I get off air. But whose standards are we talking about here? And like I was saying before with the shiv that they're trying to really stuff down between the vacker and the anti-vacker parents, this is going to be pitchforks and torches. Mama bears are not going to take too fucking kindly to doofy school nurses deciding. And I mean, look at what they're going to do now. Let's put the Stasi hat on the doofy school nurse and make her feel like she's important. Because you know what? That goes to people's heads. Just like the pseudo-intellectuals that come on this network, one in particular is a guest who thinks he's just so fucking smart that he can sit there and destroy people's opinion because he's so fucking smart. I had an old friend like that. And you know what? I wanted to gouge his eyeballs out every time I heard him talk in his snarky tone, telling everyone how fucking smart he is. It's just very irritating. And these people who don't do any of the research. I mean, I spent half my night last night sitting up reading about dental sealants. So I was armed again for the third fucking time in a row with all the data in my head, looking at how there are ethical dentists out there who are saying back up the truck because we have no real studies at all. On any of the long-term effects of spraying this BPA-laden plastic into your child's mouth, especially between the ages of 8 and 10. We have no idea what this is going to do in the long term, though in animal studies, it shows all kinds of bad endocrine effects. Early puberties, early cancers, ovarian damage, damage to the testes, whoops. But hey, we don't give a shit, American Dental Association. We don't give a shit, American Academy of Pediatrics, because we all get kickbacks. And you know what? It makes for happy people if everyone just conforms. I don't know. Maybe my child's dental bacteria will infect your child's if I don't get the dental sealant. This just makes me very angry. So I don't know. I mean, we should be calling every single one of our representatives saying, are you on fucking crack, to be forcing vaccinations on all children, unless, of course, you have an approved government doctor. Is that what it's going to be? Your doctor needs to be in the Obamacare healthcare plan, lining them up for those vaccinations. Otherwise, you're not going to public school. And oh, what? You're not going to public school Well, then maybe we should send CPS out to your house to do health and welfare checks once a week. I saw that there was something like that that they were talking about now, that for homeschoolers. And I just saw there was another one. They took like all the kids away from the free range family. But what are they going to be sending them out here? This just makes me so upset. And I mean, it's just one facet of so many different things. And honestly, guys, I am not in a good mood right now. So this is going to suck as far as the show goes. All right, I'm going to hop off this. We'll drop this into chat, read it and weep. I don't even know what to do about this, but it's coming. So I catch a story back in April, and I got to find it. And I didn't mention it because I just fucking hate Cuomo. Can I tell you that? Cuomo is just one of the biggest douchebags I've ever seen in politics. I liked his dad, but this dude, this Andrew, is just a douchebag. But there was a story that came out in April, and I raised an eyebrow because I was like, what are we doing? It was like when we had, what were the three amigos here? Bloomie, Shoomie, and Cuomo, right? Always jumping with their tongues hanging out, trying to always like get into somebody's lap to use them to make themselves look good. But I see the story. It was April 21st. For New York Governor Cuomo, a trip to Cuba brings trade deals and talks about human rights. Democrat tours ports and meets privately with the first vice president. I was like, all right, so is this like Cuomo jumping on the Sochi Olympics, crying about his fucking yogurt that was sitting in the port that the Russians wouldn't take because it was loaded with nanotech and crap, trying to make New York, I don't know, whatever he's doing. Who knows what he's doing? I just didn't get why all of a sudden, the second that Obama says that he wants to normalize ties with Cuba, and I still haven't figured out exactly what all the ins and outs of that are, but I'm sure there's some evil plan brewing there. Why is Cuomo in the middle of all this? Well, let's read a little bit of the story, and then I'll tell you I found the answer yesterday. Says Havana, in the final hours of perhaps the most delicate diplomatic dance of his career. He's such a douche. I can't even stand looking at this dude's face. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo sought at turns to appease and to gently influence the communist leadership of this country as Cuba and the U.S. struggle to redefine their relationship. Like, what? If it's so delicate, what the fuck is a governor from a state doing in the middle of all this? Get the fuck out, Cuomo. Worry about all the issues in your own fucking state, okay? We got more than our share of issues, and he's off in fucking Cuba trying to get himself some cigars. I mean, seriously, and he was too. Somewhere in one of these stories that I read, and this is the Wall Street Journal story, but I was reading a CNN story upstairs, and it said that he went and got himself a fucking Cuban cigar. Mr. Cuomo, whose 2-day trade mission to Cuba was documented at times by a crush of international reporters, started Tuesday morning after spending the night at the home of Ambassador Jeff DeLaurentiis, the U.S.'s mission chief in the country. He then stopped at the Port of Mariel, where nearly a $1 billion project to modernize is underway. While a few of the New York-based business executives accompanying the governor expressed interest in a port if the U.S. lifts its half-century-long embargo, Mr. Cuomo wasn't there just for their benefit. His appearance at the development site was required by the Cuban government as a condition of the trade mission, according to a gubernatorial aide. Oh, yes, because Cuomo's so fucking important. Another self-important asshole. By the way, hey, anybody have self-important assholes they want to bring on for guests? Skip it, please, okay? Because I'm done with the shit. Skip it, please. They're not welcome here. I don't like this shit. with a handful of exceptions, including trips last year to Israel and Afghanistan. Go Cuomo! Mr. Cuomo is typically steered clear of foreign affairs. Well, they forgot about the Sochi Olympics yogurt one. He vowed before his trip to avoid touching on diplomatic aspects of the Cuba-U.S. political relationship. Such meddling, yes, that's a very good word for what he does. He meddles. Would have little immediate political benefit to the second-term governor unless he were to seek the presidency, which is what I always thought he was going to try and do. While considered a contender for the 2016 race during his first few years of office, Cuomo fucked up. And he has since endorsed former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. But Mr. Cuomo's Cuba visit, the first by a sitting governor since Barack Obama said that he would seek to normalize relations with the islands, came at an auspicious time. Earlier in the month, Obama and Raul Castro held the first meeting of the U.S. and Cuban leaders in more than 50 years. Yeah, I think he went to the White House, actually. Raul Castro, I was like, whoa, that's messed up. Those are some photos for the walls. The White House is now seeking to remove Cuba from the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. And, you know, here's the thing. They're seeing dollar signs. Cha-ching! Against that backdrop, be careful, Cuba. That's all I can say. Against that backdrop, Mr. Cuomo faced pressure to speak out on what some of the U.S. considers the more objectionable policies in Cuba, particularly with regard to human rights, and on Tuesday, he said he had. The governor spoke privately with the first vice president, Miguel Diaz-Canel, and said later that he had addressed the subject with Mr. Diaz-Canel. Blah, 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 blah. And it doesn't talk about any real reasons why Cuomo sitting in a pink 1956 Chevy in this photograph in his first day in Havana looking at the leather seats in this mint freaking car. They don't give any real reason why Cuomo is in Cuba. Yeah, he is self-important and snarky. And you know what? I think that's his female alter ego, by the way. I don't want him here. He's done. Well, here's the real reason why Cuomo went to Cuba. Comes out, what, 3 weeks later? Roswell Park Cancer Institute is in Buffalo, New York. I have a friend that actually works there. I mentioned that. I also, way back when Fukushima first happened, I was still getting corporate press releases from large corporations around Buffalo. And at that time, and I remember getting a press release talking about how the Department of Defense, and it was odd because the press release is now gone. And you never really saw it in the news, but the Department of Defense had funded a big study at Roswell Park Cancer Institute to start testing some of their new DARPA technology for anti-radiation on dying cancer patients. I thought that was very disturbing. Again, the desperate with their mad science gone mad and using the desperate to line up. And of course, it was being done in the name of trying to make the dying's last days going through chemotherapy that probably wasn't such a good idea to begin with, a little more comfortable. But on the flip side, it was Department of Defense and DARPA dollars, DARPA technology that they were testing on these dying people. That was my first key to Roswell Park. Well, here we go, guys. It's all about money. And Mario, that was his father. Andrew Cuomo wants a cut. Cuba has a lung cancer vaccine, and America wants it bad. This is out of Wired Magazine as of May 11th. Cuba has for several years had a promising therapeutic vaccine against lung cancer. and 55-year trade embargo led by the U.S. made sure that Cuba was mostly where it stayed until now, maybe. Honestly, I'd be a little scared of any vaccine coming out of Cuba, considering when I read through, I heard of an interview one time, and Fidel Castro had claimed that the U.S. tried to assassinate him like 300 and some odd times. And I was like, come on, 300 and some odd times. Then I looked it up. Yeah, apparently they're, I don't know if they've all been documented. My one friend says he's just paranoid thinking it was that many tries. But wasn't Fidel Castro also the leader that claimed that we had a vaccine laden with cancer, that we were trying to give him fast-acting cancer? That all goes back to that story with Dr. Mary's monkey that everyone says is bullshit with that, what's her name? Judith Barry Baker and the JFK assassination, Oswald, whatever. Go all the way back to that story. Supposedly they were developing this vaccine that was laden with cancer that they were trying to use to assassinate Castro. So I don't know. I wouldn't be 1.0 lining up for this one. Anyway, the Obama administration has, of course, been trying to normalize relations with the island nation. And at last month, during New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's visit to Havana, Roswell Park Cancer Institute finalized an agreement with Cuba's Center for Molecular Immunology to develop a lung cancer vaccine and begin clinical trials in the U.S. Ha ha ha! Busted! I just, you know, I gotta tell you, when I saw Cuomo going to Cuba, I was like, what? That again was one of those what the fuck moments. You knew he had something up his sleeve. Essentially, the U.S. researchers will bring the Climavax vaccine stateside and get on track for approval by, yes, the very trusted Food and Drug Administration. They're seeing dollar signs raining from the sky. Quote, "The chance to evaluate a vaccine like this is a very exciting prospect," says Candace Johnson, CEO of Roswell Park. She's excited, most likely because research on the vaccine so far shows that it has low toxicity and it is relatively cheap to produce and store. The Center for Molecular Immunology will give Roswell Park all of the documentation, how it is produced, toxicity data, results from past trials for an FDA drug application. Johnson says she hopes to get approval for testing Climavax. Simavax, Cimavax, within 6 to 8 months to start clinical trials in a year. Now, look, hey, I am not saying that a lung cancer vaccine wouldn't be a good thing. Holy shit. Did my great-grandfather die of lung cancer? Who was in the hospital that was dying of lung cancer? My mother's best friend's dad, died of lung cancer. That wasn't my great-grandfather. He saw her. They were actually in the hospital at the same time. One of my dad's good friends died of lung cancer. I mean, we've all known someone with lung cancer. With all the crap we breathe in the air, all the people that smoke, would be a great thing. But I don't know. I wouldn't be number one lining up for this. That's all I got to say. Cuba, I'm sure Cuba wants to boost their economy. They still is. I don't know if they still are communist. I really don't know much about Raul. I know Fidel didn't trust us as far as he could throw us. Just seems odd after all these years, all of a sudden we open the doors and there's all kinds of cooperation now out of the blue. This almost looks like a Trojan horse if I didn't know any better. How did Cuba end up with a cutting edge immunological drug? Well, Though the country is justly famous for cigars, rum, and baseball, it is also some of the best and most inventive biotech and medical research in the world. That's especially notable for a country where the average worker only earns $20 a month. Cuba spends a fraction of the money the U.S. does on healthcare per individual, yet the average Cuban has life expectancy on par with the average American. They've had to do more with less. Hey, that's the motto of Microsoft, says Johnson. So they've had to be even more innovative with how they approach things. For over 40 years, they have had a preeminent immunology community. You know, I would love to find out that it was either some sort of cannabinoid or some sort of turmeric derivative. Despite, I mean, I don't know. They don't really kind of give anything about this. I'll have to dig into this Kimivax. Despite decades of economic sanctions, Fidel and Raul Castro made biotechnology and medical research, particularly preventative medicine, a priority after the 1981 dengue fever outbreak struck nearly 350,000 Cubans. The government established the Biological Front, an effort to focus research efforts by various agencies towards specific goals. Its first major accomplishment was the successful and unexpected production of interferon, a protein that plays the role in human immune response. Since then, Cuban immunologists made several other vaccination breakthroughs, including their own vaccines for meningitis B and hepatitis B, and a monoclonal antibody for kidney transplants. I wonder if their Hep B vaccine kills 30... Actually, I think it was two babies sick in 37, and I don't know, there were 110 that had gone to the hospital. Did you see that for Mexico? We'll have to look at that after this. There was a large number of children that got sickened by this vaccine for hepatitis B, and something else was in there as well. The thing about making such great cigars is smoking is really, really bad for you. Lung cancer is the fourth leading cause of death in Cuba. Hey, I didn't think of that connection, so Cubans should know. Medical researchers at the Center for Molecular Immunology worked on Simivax for 25 years before the Ministry of Health made it available to the public for free in 2011. Wow. Each shot cost the government about $1? Holy crap. And they're going to charge us $10,000. You wait and see. A phase two trial from 2008 showed lung cancer patients who received the vaccine lived an average of 4 to 6 months longer than those who didn't. So that was clinical two trials. That prompted Japan and some European countries to initiate Simivax trials as well. To be fair, Simivax won't be a game-changing cancer drug in its current form. Of course not. The vaccine does not attack tumors directly, instead going after a protein that tumors produce, which then circulates in the blood. That action spurs a person's body to release antibodies against a hormone called epidermal growth factor, which typically spurs cell growth, but can also, if unchecked, cause cancer. Although most people normally think of a vaccine as something that prevents a disease, technically a vaccine is a substance that stimulates the immune system in some way. So the point of Simivax is to keep lung tumors from growing and metastasizing, turning a late-stage cancer growth into something chronic but manageable, which is kind of what some of the other natural substances do. I mean, I know with turmeric, they've looked at how it causes apoptosis in the tumor itself, and it does that by preventing new blood vessels from growing to feed the tumor. So a little different, but the same. But if you stop taking, like, cannabis oil or turmeric, they can grow back. They can continue to proliferate. But in the U.S. and Europe, people with lung cancer already have treatment options with the same goal. Roswell Park researchers say they plan to explore the vaccine's potential as a preventative intervention, making it more like a traditional vaccine. Furthermore, epidermal growth factors plays an important role in many other cancers like prostate, breast, colon, and pancreatic cancers. My good friend's mom died of that. All of those things, and there really is nothing you can do about pancreatic cancer. All of the things that are potential targets for this vaccine, says Calvin Lee, an immunologist at the company, mostly for financial reasons, Cubans didn't test Climavax that way at all. And that drug isn't the only one with potential in the Cuban pharmacopoeia. Thomas Rothstein, a biologist at the Feinstein Institute of Medical Research, has for 6 years worked with the Center for Molecular Immunology on another vaccine to treat lung cancer called Rocotumomab, R-A-C-O-T-U-M-O-M-A-B, Rocotumomab, with an entirely different mechanism. It messes with a particular lipid found in tumor cell membranes. Investigators from around the world are trying to crack the nut of cancer, Rothstein says, and the Cubans are thinking in ways that are novel and clever. Oh, those clever Cubans. Although Obama has used his executive power to lift some restrictions against medical and research equipment, Congress must lift the Cuban embargo before collaborative research can ramp up. Johnson hopes to see Cuba embrace more entrepreneurialism in science and see the U.S. soak up the creative approaches to medical research. Constrained by politics, the Cuban researchers had to innovate in ways the U.S. and Europe did not, and now maybe they'll be able to reach their colleagues with what they've learned. So, I don't know, not a bad story, but like I said, very interesting when I asked, why the hell is Cuomo going to Cuba? Totally makes sense now. We're seeing dollar signs falling from the sky. All right, where do we go next? I don't know. I have all kinds of stories to do, and I'm just so beyond annoyed right now that I really don't even feel like doing this. Well, let's not get on the biological. Maybe I'll do that tomorrow if I'm in a better mood. I think one of the things I'm going to look at today is to show you how, let's connect me up here. Everything I've been saying about the lockdown and the internet is coming true because a video came out yesterday that nobody watched, of course, because nobody watches any of them. But the narrative is there. And the new NSA chief, that scary fucker, whatever his name is, I can't even think of his name, but wow, does he look like an evil person, came out and said now that, yes, ISIS is using the internet to radicalize, like we said, and it should be viewed as a quote-unquote potential weapons system. Yes, the internet. I got to play this for you. Hold on. I wish my head would stop pounding. All right, here we go.
U.S. intelligence believes ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, for now, remains firmly in charge. There's no intelligence indicating he's been injured in a recent coalition airstrike, despite press reports. The U.S. has already identified these men as potential successors to the ISIS leadership, putting millions of dollars of reward on each of their heads. There's no shortage of supporters on the ground or online. The latest, this video from a fringe pro-ISIS hacking group threatening a cyber attack is coming.
The thing I always look...
So we have pro-ISIS hackers out there threatening cyber attacks. All right, now hold on.
What points do groups decide that they need to move from viewing the internet as a source of recruitment, as a way to spread ideology? Do we see it more from that into something of greater concern, as viewing it as a potential weapon system?
And there we go. Wait, let's back this up. What is his name? I never remember. This is Keith Alexander's replacement, Admiral Michael Rogers. He says, oh, yeah, we saw the internet as a recruitment tool. and radicalization tool, which, you know, they've been pumping that narrative for a while. But now he sees it as a potential weapons system.
That is a source of recruitment, as a way to spread ideology. Do we see it more from that and as something of greater concern, as viewing it as a potential weapon system?
Those attacks are toughest to detect, especially when the internet can so easily recruit ISIS sympathizers.
You have.
Oh, yes, the internet. I mean, guys, here it comes. This is it. This is absolutely it. It is now a recruitment tool. Anyone who speaks out. I mean, I've had all kinds of funky stuff going on lately. I'm going to tell you, I have messages from certain people that I am not getting alerts from. And 100% today, I had 4 messages when I woke up. And 3 of those messages showed me alerts. Number 4 already showed it was red, except I was sleeping all night. So I hadn't read the message. And that's happened more times than I can count.
Have a lot of people springing up in various areas around the world that are all interested in joining this organization.
The move to ISIS going viral online, even inspiring the attack in Texas, is as worrisome for the U.S. as what is happening in Syria and Iraq.
So the attack in Texas, of course it was inspired by ISIS on the internet.
Okay. We're very definitely in a new phase in the global terrorist threat, where the so-called lone wolf could strike at any moment.
That threat from the internet giving authorities less time to catch terrorists.
Well, we are in a new phase now, and it is the internet that's caused it all.
Because of the use of the internet, we could have little or no notice in advance of an independent actor attempting to strike.
So what, does that give them now the authority to shut the internet down? Are they going to be able to turn off people's internet at a whim? I mean, I've already noticed that when I search certain terms, and we've done it on the show many times, my internet works fine until I plug in a few keywords, and all of a sudden I get the, oh, DNS probe. It's some sort of DNS probe something, page not found, no internet anywhere. Yeah, so listen to that one and weep, because here it comes, people. That pesky internet has been radicalizing for 25 years. Yeah, I think we should put naked pictures of your ass crack all over the internet. I think that would be a good one, with ISIS tattooed on your ass cheeks. I mean, this just, oh my God. And then I have people who come on as guests that seem to get a banjo up their asses, who not only attack listeners, but then start attacking my network. I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to tolerate this bullshit. I am just so beyond. I personally, I think that anyone that comes on a radio network and then starts creating problems for that network should be labeled agent provocateur. That's what I'm seeing written all over this individual. Agent provocateur, get the fuck off my network, okay? That's all I got to say. I don't want him back. Don't come back. I think everybody should go flag his channel, flag his videos, because I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. You know what? It was a privilege for you to be allowed here, and now I've revoked your privilege. How's that? Judge, jury, executioner is me, and I have now decided that you have been executed from my network. Don't come back. Don't ask to come back. If I hear you back, I pull the plug. That's it. You fucked with me. Don't fuck with me. I don't fuck with you. Don't fuck with me. And the next thing that's going to happen is I'm going to start making videos. And then I'm going to post them on a website that gets 10 billion views a month. So, and I'll call you out by name and show what a banjo player you are. Oh, I hate snarky pseudo-intellectuals who think they're so fucking smart. All right, guys. Well, I still got 20 minutes and I really don't feel like doing this show. I'm so fucking annoyed. Oh, I don't know. Maybe we should go grab one of his shows and start dissecting it on air like I do with mainstream media making fun of them. That would kind of be funny, wouldn't it? Let's go on air and talk about Gnosticism because it's so fucking important right now as the world is falling apart, pseudo-intellectual. Well, I don't know. Oh, well, here's one other thing that caught my attention yesterday. We had the very first interview ever that I've seen with an Ebola survivor that came out yesterday. And this was one of the doctors that had gotten flown to, they said he was flown to Atlanta to be treated from Liberia after he was infected. They let the doctor out because he was Ebola free. And then here months later, his eyes, one eye changed color. I don't remember if it was blue to green or green to blue. And they discovered that the Ebola was in his eyeball. And not only was it in his eyeball, but it had been proliferating virus inside of his eyeball all this time. Now, I don't know about you, but I've never heard. And I mean, maybe I'm no immunologist or Ebola doctor, but an eyeball full of Ebola? That's another one of those what the fuck stories. And an eyeball full of Ebola that changed from blue to green. But thank God he survived and he got to keep his eyeball. And he got to do an interview. The first interview, I mean, we were asking this in the beginning, where are all these fucking doctors that got saved, quote unquote saved, that were infected with Ebola and flown to this country? Well, we found one. How can Ebola hide in the bodies of survivors? I also read a story not too long ago about a gentleman who had been cured in October, and apparently he had sex with four different women over the last few months. One woman became infected, and I think we read that story, and it was through semen. And, I mean, he was apparently cured since October. So, all right, let's hear the very first interview that I'm aware of from an Ebola survivor. Oh, wait a minute. I need to join the call again. All right, here we go.
This weekend marked a major milestone in the fight to end the Ebola outbreak. Liberia was declared Ebola-free after 42 days without a new case. Many took to the streets to celebrate, and efforts are underway to rebuild schools, hospitals, and other clinics. The disease has killed more than 10,000 people in West Africa, including 500-plus healthcare workers. While the outbreak has slowed considerably, there are new health complications for survivors. Dr. Ian Crozier is one American healthcare worker who nearly lost his life while volunteering in Sierra Leone with the World Health Organization. After contracting the virus, he was evacuated to Atlanta's Emory University Hospital, and he eventually recovered. Months later, the virus was found in his eye, and it nearly blinded him before a series of procedures and treatments. He is still experiencing a number of other symptoms, but he joins me now. And Dr. Crozier, welcome, and we're so glad that to see you doing much better.
Good afternoon, Judy. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be anywhere.
Tell us, first of all, how are you doing? It's, been 8 months since you were first diagnosed.
So I'm doing remarkably well, given what I've been through. You know, first of all, I'm fortunate to be here and to be alive. And secondly, to be looking at you through two fairly clear eyes is quite remarkable. So still struggling with a few symptoms that have been part of my sort of post-Ebola syndrome, but I'm doing much better than I was a few months ago. Thank you.
Tell us briefly about what happened in your eye, and is it gone? Is the Ebola now gone from your eye?
So in early December, we call uveitis. Forgive the medical speak, but it actually reflected a great deal of inflammation inside the eye, to put it simply. And once that began, it became obvious that it was going to be severe and that it was going to be sight-threatening. As part of my evaluation, because we were really worried about a risk for other viruses after a long hospital stay, Steve Yeh at the Emory Eye Clinic introduced a needle into the front room of my eye, the anterior chamber, and there he found incredibly high numbers of active and replicating Ebola virus, which was a great surprise at the time.
And that was treated, and today you are much better, but as I understand it, it may still be there.
Yeah, so to get back to your question, I received some experimental treatment and a lot of anti-inflammatory medicine, steroids by mouth, steroids by injection into the eye, and topical steroids. And unfortunately, to actually know for sure that the virus is no longer there, we would need to reintroduce that needle and tap the eye again. And given the fact that the pressures in my eye have been low, that that procedure's risks probably outweigh the benefits. That may come down the road. There is every indication, given the clinical improvement that I've had, I mean, it really has been sort of a Lazarine return of the eye, that the virus is no longer there, but I can't say that for sure.
But it's our understanding that it's not contagious, though.
So it's very important to point out, actually, this was inside the eye, in the anterior chamber. My tear fluids, the conjunctiva, which is the outside of the eye, those swabs were all negative, even at very high levels inside the eye. So it's important to point out that even despite finding Ebola inside the eye, there's no risk of transmission by casual contact. This is important because Ebola survivors on the ground are facing a fair amount of stigma already, and I don't want this finding to add to that difficulty.
I mean, here's the question. Has this always been this way, where Ebola can hide in the body and go into different body parts like eyes, you know, NADs, who knows, and not be detectable even if you're considered quote-unquote cured? Or is this some newfangled thing that just happened, never before seen? I mean, I've never heard of Ebola being in someone's eye and, oh, God, it's not contagious, but it could still be there. I mean, what? That's just really bizarro to me.
Well, this was not only an enormous physical challenge for you battling your way back, but it has to have also been a psychological challenge. You've spoken of having survivor's guilt.
Yeah, I suppose, though unwarranted, I have a fair amount of survivor's guilt. You know, if you had told me on day one of my symptoms that within a week I would develop multi-system organ failure, it's an ominous term, but my brain failed and my kidney failed and my lungs failed, and I needed sort of a level of critical care that really had never been given to that degree before, especially in someone who survived. As I was going through that, I'm, of course, incredibly grateful to the WHO and to the State Department.
Of course.
I would have been dead in a week had I not received that care. But
in
I'm
the past
also
couple
haunted
weeks,
a little
we've
bit
heard
by,
two
by many of my patients and some colleagues and friends who didn't have that opportunity. And that really reflects an inequity in global health that I think we're all about trying to change for years now. It's particularly gratifying to me that my eye case, which is really on the front edge of essentially a new disease.
Ah, there we go. Essentially a new disease. Yeah, you know, I just was looking. Sorry, there. I hate when you go to a web page and it starts playing a video before you even see what the page is. But I just was looking, and yes, the testes in the eye are now two places that apparently Ebola can hide. And the other disease that it was striking me that this reminded me of, where once you have it and you can be treated for it, but it can get away from you and hide, is Lyme's disease, where those little spigots can get into your joints and hide for 20 years away from medication. And, you know, Lyme's now is something that was pretty well established, was something that was developed at Plum Island. And, you know, we've been talking about how this was a quote-unquote potentially manufactured virus. And this just really adds another checkmark, for me at least, to say that it was. It's some sort of lab-created virus. It did not come out of the fruit bat tree that they found and cut down.
An inequity in global health that I think we're all about trying.
And I want to say one more thing. Thank God for the State Department and the World Health Organization, as he said.
Trying to change for years now. It's particularly gratifying to me that my eye case, which is really on the front edge of essentially a new disease.
Wow, the video loses audio after that. Huh, there's no more audio after that. He's talking, but there's nothing being said. Huh, hold on 1 second. I want to hear the rest of what he said, because now that could be important.
Yeah.
Hold on, stop, stop, stop. I got to go out to PBS's website. This was from the 11th. I'll find it. Here it is. Oh, he did a 54-minute interview. Full hour episode. Oh, this is the whole episode. That's what it is. All right, hold on. I found him. We'll find him. Because I really want to hear the rest of it.
Long hospital stay. Steve Yeh at the Emory Eye Clinic introduced a needle into the
All right,
front room.
We'll move this forward.
I'm, of course, incredibly grateful to the WHO and to the State Department. I would have been dead in a week had I not received that care. But I'm also haunted a little bit by many of my patients and some colleagues and friends who didn't have that opportunity. And that really reflects an inequity in global health that I think we're all about trying to change for years now. It's particularly gratifying to me that my eye case, which is really on the front edge of essentially a new disease. We had a little signal back in the 1990s of some eye disease in survivors, but this is really a new disease in some ways. And so the fact that my case can hopefully directly and immediately and relevantly be translated to West Africa and prevent West African eyes from going blind is very gratifying, because I certainly struggle with holding those two things in tension.
Well, so this is essentially a new disease. That's great.
Well, and I did want to ask you about that. You just went back to Sierra Leone a few weeks ago, and what did you find there? And it is the case, as you say, that your own experience can be of help as doctors try to figure out the post Ebola difficulties that other survivors are having.
Yeah, so people obviously are taking care of survivors on the ground there. And John Fankhauser at the ELWA hospital, an SIM mission hospital, who's been caring for survivors for some time now and is, in a sense, one of the on-the-ground experts, was seeing patients with eye disease. He invited a small team from Emory, headed by Dr. Steve Yeh. And we, within a short week, saw over 100 Liberian survivors with eye complaints. And though we need to learn a great deal about this disease, it is important. I think the window will be short in which to diagnose and to classify and to provide treatment for these eyes. And this really was the first look, in one sense, especially by Steve, who had fairly rapidly become the world's expert in this disease. And
what's so weird is that you have the optic nerve that goes to the brain, so somehow this virus didn't spread anywhere outside the eye. Somehow his eye wasn't hemorrhaging and bleeding. I mean, it changed color, but doesn't Ebola make you bleed out of orifices? I don't know. This just seems so weird to me. Again, this is another one of those stories that makes me raise an eyebrow and go, huh? This is just odd. And what? I don't know. I just don't get it.
So we saw indeed that Liberian survivors, some portion of them, are developing eye symptoms, and some of those patients are developing sight-threatening disease. If we can change the natural history of that process, it will be remarkable and extremely gratifying to me if my case can be useful that way. You can imagine that a survivor who has, in a sense, survived their first death and come out and then faces the tragedy of a second death. You know, going blind is not so far down the food chain from dying. And if we can change the natural history of that process, I'd like to be part of that.
Well, Dr. Ian Crozier, it is quite a journey you've been on. I know everyone is...
All right, whatever. So, I don't know, Ebola in the eye, something else to be afraid of. Just how messed up is that? Here's this other story, why testicles are the perfect hiding spot for Ebola. So apparently you can run away and hide in your eyeball and your balls. The two balls. Gonads provide a safe haven for the virus, which is bad news for Ebola survivors who want to have sex. I don't know. I don't really feel like digging into this anymore today. Not a good morning. I think I'm going to go back to bed and start all over tomorrow. Yeah, we got a minute and a half. I don't know, guys. I don't know what else to say. Thank you for those who ruined my show today. Thank you very much. I really don't have anything else to say except for expletives and nasty things. So make sure you guys stick around. I don't know. It's Wednesday night. So what's on tonight? We have... I'm not running the show, by the way, today. In the 5 o'clock slot, I'll run a different one. The boys from New York are on at 8. Josh is on at 6 p.m. Eastern. Truth or Talk with April and Verstein. This is their mommy special. The replay from Sunday is running at 9. And Antimedia with Nick and DB at 11. And it's Wednesday. So, I don't know, Wednesdays suck as bad as Mondays sometimes. All I got to say is... I, you know what? I am so nice to people and I let a lot of things go, but I'm not letting this go. And if you come on my network and you start dissing my listeners and then you start attacking the network, you just declared war on me. And I don't know what else to say to you, but you must be A, very immature, and B, not so smart. And I mean, I don't know what you're thinking, but it's not going to fly with me and I'm not going to take an apology. Because you've done it 3 times now, and that's 3 strikes. I have a very strict 3-strike policy. It's happened before, and it's happened again. So please don't even ask me for forgiveness, because it's done. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Wednesday. And hopefully tomorrow's a better day. All right, we'll catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.